Warm up the duck boats and start singing Sweet Caroline. It's time for the Boston Breakdown. I'm Joe Braverman, and on this show, we discuss the biggest news and stories in the world of Boston sports. Everything from the Patriots,
let's go!
Red Sox,
can you believe it?
Bruins,
the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup,
and Celtics. Game action, transactions, you name it, we'll discuss it. Now, it's time to break it down.
Along with lovers, buggers, and thieves.
The Celtics are going to take a 2-0 lead in the finals. A smothering defense.
But I love that dirty water.
Yo, yo, and another yo coming at you here on Monday, June 10th, 2024, episode number 15 of the Boston Breakdown Podcast. This is the Dustin Pedroia episode. We're going to keep it recent, a guy who was just inducted into the Red Sox Hall of Fame, so properly named for the Red Sox legend, three-time World Series champion, and personally one of my favorite players growing up. So again, everyone, thank you for tuning in. If you are watching us or listening to us, however you are consuming this podcast, this is normally the time where I usually throw it to a conversation that I've had. We talk about Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, Red Sox, but not going to happen this week. It is all about me, myself, and I. You're going to hear my thoughts firsthand as it's a wild time. I should say wild, but also exciting, because the Boston Celtics are the talk of the town. But for those of you who want a little bit more Red Sox, I'll just give you a quick synopsis. 33-33, even though they're a game and a half out of the wild card spot, splitting against the White Sox, who have the worst record in the American League. Good. Not good at all. So that's your quick Red Sox minute. And if you want more, you can catch me on the brand new episode of Play Tessie. It just released earlier this morning as we're recording on Monday. Drop day, obviously, for this podcast is on Tuesday, but we got into a lot of the Red Sox there, so you can check that out. But this episode is going to be all about the Celtics, because the Celtics are the talk of the town. They should be the talk of the town. And if you don't get excited about a finals run for the Celtics, now two wins away from an NBA championship, you got to check your pulse. You got to make sure you grew up here. Because let's face it, everyone is excited about Banner 18. Now halfway there for these Celtics as they take the first two games in Boston. They'll set sail now for Dallas for game three on Wednesday night. I am very excited for that because I am going to the TD Garden watch party. So if you happen to also be at the Garden watch party, just look for me and we'll have a great time watching the Celtics hopefully win game three and get on the brink one win away from a championship. But let's talk about these first two games that we've seen this past Thursday night and this past Sunday night. Two, I would say, very different games, but they've all kind of had the same result, not just with the win, but the keys on what's going on. So I want to start with game one, obviously, on Thursday night, 107-89. Really, just looking at it, the game was won in that first quarter and in that first half, because it was essentially an avalanche from Kristaps Porzingis, which is a story on itself. The fact that Porzingis comes off the bench. I was initially surprised when he came off the bench, but then looking at it bigger picture for a guy that had that tedious of an injury where it's a strain that if you rush it or you don't, or the player doesn't come back in the right amount of time, it can lead to a bigger injury. It kind of makes sense for the kind of injury that it was. If it was like an ankle sprain, something like that, then you might say like he probably should be in the starting lineup. But big picture, I was okay with it. I mean, they had won 7 straight playoff games with the starting five, with Al Horford and with the usual four. So I understand why you wouldn't want to break it. But then the ovation that he got when he checked in for the first time he played in like 39 days. It was unreal. Unreal, the energy from that Garden crowd. And then you go into what he actually did on both ends of the floor. I mean, he had that deep three. He comes back. He blocks Kyrie Irving. And he just keeps making shot after shot. He blocks Josh Green going for the dunk attempt at the end of the first quarter. I mean, Porzingis, to me, was the MVP of that game. I know he only had 18 in the first half and finished with 20, but still, just his energy, his presence, his length was a big factor in the Celtics winning that game. I mean, as I said, 18 in that first half. He finished 7 of 12 shooting because they really didn't ask him to do much after that. 6 rebounds, 3 of blocks off the bench, just having that 7-3 rim protector that gives you a little bit more quickness if they do get into a switch. You know, if you get one of these guys like Kyrie or Luka switched out onto him, you feel a little more confident with him rather than Al Horford, because Horford just doesn't have that speed to keep up. The other big story, or I should say there were many stories from this game. One another story that can be talked about was Jason Tatum, the struggles that he had. But I put struggles very minimally, because really the only things that he struggled with was his shooting and the turnovers. And he admitted the turnovers right after the game. I mean, 6 turnovers on the day, on the night. Obviously the most by anyone on the Celtics. But still, even with those 6 turnovers, they were able to win by 18. But other than that, 16 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. He's a plus 19 on the floor. You know, when you go back to the early days of Tatum and Brown, you focus more on their offense, but you got to realize how good of defenders they have gotten year after year. And Tatum was able to be a lot more physical defensively than we've seen in the past. And he just feels more comfortable. He feels more confident. And even the shooting doesn't get brought up because they didn't need it. They didn't need all that shooting because they had the energy from Porzingis. They were getting shots knocked down from Derek White. Jaylen Brown was being a factor in it. So you don't need him to score. It's essentially like what everyone is thinking is Drew Holiday, you know, and we'll get into game 2 and what he did. But the idea for Holiday was he can be put in a bunch of different places where if they need him to defend and not score, if they need him to score, if they need him to distribute, a bunch of different roles that they need from him. Tatum can do the exact same thing. He can focus more on being a distributor on the rebounding side of things. So I wasn't at all going to detract from Tatum's game. I wasn't going to be the one who looked more at his struggle shooting the ball more than his actual playmaking. So I thought Tatum had a good for game one. Not a great one. Not at all. As I mentioned, the turnovers and the shooting, but he was still a key contributor in that game one win. And then you just look defensively overall, not just from Tatum, but the defense being physical and their length was really, really impressive to see. The fact that Dallas was only 7 of 27 from 3. And as a team, they only had 9 assists. Luka only had 1 assist. He got his usual scoring and his rebounds, 30 and 10. But he just looked completely lost, completely lost. And when you look at Dallas offensively, the offense runs through Luka. Anytime he's on the floor or Kyrie's on the floor, it's always going to get to Luka. He's going to touch the ball at least twice, I would say. That's essentially what it is. That's the kind of offensive force that Luka Doncic provides. And in that game one, he rides on being a playmaker and being able to get those fancy assists and get all those buckets. I mean, he had it in the third quarter when he shot the lights out. He got it to 8, but it just wasn't enough because they were working him so much on both ends of the floor that even Luka Doncic wasn't able to make things happen on his own. So you have him, you combine that with Kyrie shooting only 6 of 19 from the floor and 0 of 5 from 3, only 12 points. They need much more from that, does Dallas. Absolutely. They needed much more than that in game one. So I think that was an extremely impressive game one win by the Celtics. They had contributions almost everywhere. You even had Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard out there making their contributions. Even Drew Holiday said after the game, hey, our white guys guard. So everyone's got a guard. So game one, I was just very impressed, very happy. And it kind of, again, shows me that the Celtics of old, when I say Celtics of old, I mean the past year or two, specifically the first year under Joe Mazzulla a year ago, where they would build these leads, they would shrink, and then they would just get away, flat out get away. They've changed. They have changed, and I think part of that has to do with Joe Mazzulla, definitely his tendencies. He's a lot more comfortable in this position. We've talked about it with multiple guests here, with Bobby Kravitsky, Jack Simone, Justin Turpin. Joe Mazzulla is a different coach from what we saw a year ago, and he is stressing the right amount of things. If you look on social media, you can see videos of Mazzulla mic'd up during game one, and he's stressing defense a lot of the time. So even though everyone wants to think that offense is his main priority, he still knows how important defense is to winning, and the fact that he knows that the energy on defense is able to help the Celtics in their offense. So I think philosophy-wise, from what you saw a year ago to now, is a complete 360, and you have to give Joe Mazzulla credit. I mean, he can get bailed out by these great players, but you can't criticize him more than you can congratulate him, because he's done much better this season as compared to last season. I mean, we could go on and on about the changes that Mazzulla has made from last year to this year and all the situations he's gone through. But again, it reinforces when Dallas cut it to 8, Mazzulla took the timeout, reinforced some stuff, and then Celtics went on another big run, got it back up to double digits, got it to, I think, 28 or something at one point. That just, again, shows you the maturity from the core of this team. And I'm talking Tatum, Brown, Horford, everyone who's been here for a long time, is that those tendencies are not going to rear its ugly head once again. So that, to me, was the most impressive out of game one, was, again, the demons of old not coming into a play. So Celtics and their fans were feeling good after game one. They really rattled. They had a good crowd. They rattled Kyrie a little bit. Not saying that's the main reason why he struggled, but you can definitely say that was a factor. Game two, that happened on Sunday night, a little bit closer though, 105-98. And this one was tight pretty much until that fourth quarter. Before then, I think I want to address what Jason Kidd said in a practice the day before, where he was calling Jaylen Brown the best player. I mean, I think that's just pure gamesmanship. Jason Kidd is one of those guys from the late 90s, early 2000s, where it was basically a game of gamesmanship. When you had, look back on the 08 Celtics run when Leon Poe had a great game too, and Phil Jackson, the Lakers coach at the time, called him Pow. It's just some mind games. You're trying to play mind games, because I think Jason Kidd is a student of the game, and he knows that in the past there's been this outside noise and maybe these mental blocks that Tatum and Brown run into a little bit, where if Kidd were to make these comments, Brown and or Tatum would find a way to prove him wrong or prove him right. So that would mean Jason Tatum takes a lot more shots, Jaylen Brown takes a lot more shots, and it tried to stir it up. But again, just like I said about the tendencies of last year and in the past overall not coming back, the maturity is showed by both of their comments in practice. Brown basically shooing it away, saying, "I don't care." Tatum saying, "I don't care." I think, again, more maturity is showing throughout these NBA finals. Now in the game itself, I think, again, everyone might want to circle on the offensive struggles once again of Jason Tatum. And he did struggle shooting, 6 of 22 from the field, 1 of 7 from 3. But this is the key. If you watch that game from start to finish, which I did, most of the time on offense, I would say about 80% of the time, the offense ran through him. You look at him when the offensive set was ready to get going, it would always start with Tatum isolation on a defender, and then he does whatever move he wants to make, whether it's driving and then dishing, driving and then putting a shot up. The offense ran through him, and the fact that he was able to be that playmaker and to get 12 assists on the night and get a rebound shy of a triple-double to go along with those 18 points, and then limit the turnovers once again, only to 3. I think that should be more applauded than anything. So I am not going to be the one to focus on those struggles, because absolutely he could be shooting better. But then again, you have Dallas showing double and triple teams every time he's driving, every time he's isolated one-on-one. There's always a weak side defender coming over. So Tatum is smart enough to understand that, and there's so many weapons around him that he feels more comfortable to distribute the ball and do other stuff like defend, to pass, to rebound, rather than focus so much on scoring. Yes, he took the most shots, but the offense ran through him. So I want to focus on that part of it rather than focus on the shooting struggles, because absolutely these shooting struggles are something to watch for. The fact that he can't buy a bucket from three-point range, I think, will be an issue if the game were to call for it. But the fact is, he's doing other stuff within his game to make him that much better, and he's got the weapons around him to help bail him out. So I'm not going to be like a full green teamer and defend Jason Tatum at all costs and saying he had a perfect game, but I'm not going to be a detractor who says he absolutely sucked and he couldn't do anything last night, because he was very, very impressive. Just like I mentioned, he doesn't have to be the top scorer. He's got enough weapons around him. He's got Jaylen Brown, who continues to have a great finals. He's got Drew Holiday, who always seems to make the perfect impact. This time it was on the scoring end, the fact that he got 26 points and only had 3 misses from the field shooting, and he also had 11 rebounds. I think that needs to be the focal point for Jason Tatum, because anyone in his situation in these finals would be applauded for that. Look at a guy like Nikola Jokic. If he wasn't scoring and he was doing all of this against Miami and he wasn't scoring the ball well, he would still be applauded for just being a 7-foot-tall playmaker. You know, go down the list of all the superstars. You know, it's just, I could write a novel on all the criticism that Jason Tatum's got. It's completely unwarranted, but that's a story for another day. Let's wait until Banner 18 hopefully gets raised in TD Garden. But for now, I'm going to praise Jason Tatum for what he's done. As a team, I mean, he wasn't the only one that was struggling from 3. The threes weren't falling at all in that game. You look at the numbers, just this is a few numbers I got right here. 1 of 9 from 3 in the first quarter, 3 of 15 in the first half, and then 10 of 39 total. Now, this is the biggest focal point heading into the year was, can Joe Mazzulla stray away from winning games with the 3? And you've kind of heard in press conferences or in interviews, whatever it may be, he still focuses on the 3 ball, but he's just not afraid to say, keep shooting, they will eventually fall. The thing about last night was that they were well-timed threes. You know, you look at Peyton Pritchard's buzzer beater, they absolutely needed that one. That built that lead back to 9. It got the crowd back into it. Pritchard was fired up himself. And then even when they weren't falling, you still had sustained energy from the defensive end. So again, Mazzulla not focused entirely on 3-pointers. He knows how important defense is in an NBA Finals, and that the phrase still remains, defense wins championships. So he's still very important with that. He just has his idea and he's not going to stray away from it. He can change his mind about defense or anything like that, but the fact that 3-pointers were not falling and they still won the game, I think, again, is a confidence builder if you're watching this team as a Celtics fan. Now, in terms of when it shrinked in the last couple of minutes, I mean, I want to say it was like a 15-point lead, and then Dallas kept cutting into it, and they got it to 4 at one point. I think that's just Luka Doncic taking over. And again, those old tendencies kind of flaring up a little bit, but luckily they had the closeout with Drew Holiday taking it to the basket, and then the defensive play, which I'll just touch on that real quick. The PJ Washington, that final play, it was blocked by Derek White. Let's be honest. Yes, it was a foul, but yes, Washington just missed it himself. So Derek White had a great game, but I'm not going to give him or Jaylen Brown any big credit for that play because that was just a Washington miss. He jumped way too soon and he couldn't elevate to put it down. And yes, he did get hit by Derek White. So it was a foul and it was a bad miss. So I don't want to give Derek White a ton of credit for that play. I still want to give him credit overall, but just on that play, you can't call him like he's a hero or anything like that. Cause that was just bad from Washington. But again, those old tendencies kind of, they came up a little bit, but the team is mature enough to be able to not get in their own head. It was just really, really slow in those 3 minutes. And that's kind of what we saw is that they focus too much on the clock and they don't have the same amount of movement on offense that they did before. And that's a theme with all of these breakdowns that seems to happen with the Celtics when these old things come up. But again, they close it out. They were able to make it happen. The Dallas side of things, I think the game plan defensively for Luka was, I think, working for the most part. I mean, yeah, triple-double, but he's a triple-double machine, is Luka Doncic. 32 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists. The key, though, is 8 turnovers. So he, again, the offense just went, if the offense was running through Luka about 70% of the time in game one, this was about 85%. Luka had the ball every single time. And if he wasn't on the floor, it would always go to number two. And it was just a lot of stagnant, I would just say. A lot of stagnant offense from Dallas. I mean, some of the passes that Luka made was just really lucky. I mean, credit the vision that he has is absolutely unreal. But if the Celtics just kind of focused in a little bit more to take away the passing, then that would be another story. And the strategy we talked about it with Terp is you either shut Luka and Kyrie down and let the others try to beat you, or you let Luka and Kyrie get theirs and focus on those role players. Well, so far it seems like they're kind of straddling the line a little bit because Luka's getting his, Kyrie absolutely not. They're going to need so much more from Kyrie if they want to get back into this series. But when you look at that game too, 48 of the 98 points were from Kyrie and Luka combined. And you got to keep in mind, 32 of the 48 were from Luka alone. So I think obviously number one is to get Kyrie going. And then number two after that is getting everyone else going. That's talking about Derek Jones Jr. That's talking about PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford. I mean, Washington and Gafford seem like they're extremely affected by the size and the length that the Celtics have. You know, they were able to work around the in the Minnesota series, really Gobert was the only guy they had to work with. Towns is more of a guy that works on the perimeter rather than down low. So guys like that and Derek Lively, they're not putting their stamp into it. And Luka's doing everything that he can to try and get him involved, but it just has not worked, at all. So it starts with Kyrie getting better first off, then you look at those role players, but overall as a team, 3-point shooting has been miserable for the Mavs right now. They were 6 of 26 in game two. That brings their grand total to 13 of 53. That's a, if you're doing the math, that's 24.5% shooting. So the fact that is these role players are not knocking down those shots. And when they do, that's going to force the Celtics defense to go out and guard. But I just think, again, it's the length, the fact that they're contesting guys like Jones and Green and Hardy who are taking these shots. And really the only one who's kind of answered the call has been PJ Washington. But they're going to need so much more. Luka's going to need so much more support. But part of that is also the Celtics defense and the plan to give Luka, to really attack Luka. Now, it's no secret that Luka is not the most in shape basketball player in the entire world. There's been questions about his stamina and being in shape. So the Celtics are exploiting this because you have Luka attacking on offense being that focal point, but they're also attacking him on the defensive end. And really both of them involve physicality. They're putting a body on Luka. They're really making him work to try and drive to the basket. Same thing on the defensive end. They get him in the isolation to work one-on-one, or they just get him moving quite a bit. So I think, again, that goes to the length that the Celtics are providing. That's really affecting basically everyone on the Mavs team. So, I mean, if you're asking me, those role players gotta, it starts as if we're looking at a tier for the Mavs. First thing they gotta do, make Kyrie Irving that much better. Kyrie's gotta be much better. Number two, role players need to be much more effective than they already been. Three is just overall 3-point shooting. They gotta get so much better at that. But it might not even be enough because the Celtics are just that good on both ends of the floor. Even when they're having a poor shooting night, they can still have all these weapons to attack the rim, get them to the free throw line. Same thing with shooters. Even if they're not shooting well, they can attack the basket. And if they can't attack, they've got guys who can shoot. And then they've just got so much length defensively that my prediction of this series going six games might even be generous. I wouldn't be, I would be surprised if this went more than five, the way that things are going. I could see Dallas taking a game, even game three this Wednesday. The fact that they're gonna get energy going back to their home floor. And obviously role players play so much better when they're at home, but I just think the Celtics team is way too much. And by the time we talk either next week or whenever that may be, we're going to be looking at an 18th banner for the Boston Celtics. So I ultimately expect them to close it out. That's just not me as a fan. I'm looking as an expert as well, because this team is just too good. And they've got so many well-liked players. Drew Holiday saying, I'm a utility player. I'll do whatever I want. Yeah, Kristaps Porzingis saying, I'll die out there after apparently cramping up near the end of that game and not returning in. Tatum, Brown, unselfish. Derek White, his confidence. Horford, his veteran leadership. They've got too much. They've got way too much. And I think Boston's going to be very happy to see the guys in green that play on the parquet floor at TD Garden get their shot at a Duck Boat Parade. And I will be very happy to be there because I'm going to stop at nothing to make sure I am there for the parade. And I hope that it comes true. I hope it comes to fruition. But it's just been so much fun to watch these games and watch the finals to see the Celtics play out. And hopefully they can get it done. Because if they can't get it done, boy, that's going to be a big disappointment. So I hope I provided all the information and recap that you needed in the first two games of the NBA Finals. We are going to sign off here from episode 15. I want to thank you all for watching us. If you're watching us on YouTube, make sure you like the video and hit subscribe. Subscribe to the channel. Get all the latest news and alerts. Don't if you're listening to us on Spotify, make sure you subscribe to those pages as well. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. We've got some social media pages as well on Instagram and Facebook. You just have to search Boston Breakdown Podcast. We will be back later on this week to talk about Tom Brady night. We'll have hopefully a special guest to come and recap what is a special night, which unfortunately is going to get overshadowed by game three of the NBA Finals. But we'll hopefully have someone who will be there in living color to explain just how everything went down. Until then, I'm Joe Braverman. You have been watching the Boston Breakdown Podcast. We will see you next time for episode 16. And I say, so long.
This is our city.